recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rage! Sports Rage with Gabe Morenci.
Rage all you want.
Level 2. This is Sports Rage. I am Morenci. SiriusXM Channel 159. Thanks to Andrew McKinnis for joining us. So we jumped on the Montreal Canadiens plus a puck and a half when they were down 1-0. They're now leading 2-1. And now we jumped in because we're never satisfied. It's never enough. It's never enough just to hold you. It's never enough. So we decided to take the in-game over 3.5. I thought it was a bad number. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe it was a bad bet. I'm somewhat surprised San Jose have not pulled their goalie yet at the 2:30 mark right now. The modern NHL, the analytics tell you to pull the goalie soon, like now type thing. I'm one of those old school guys, like when, you know, they do it with 3-4 minutes left. It's like, what are you, nuts? But the numbers actually say if you're going to do it, just do it. The problem is, for San Jose, Montreal always have control of the puck. All right, there's 2:10 left. You got to pull the damn goalie. But the problem is, I think they're trying to lose. like the players on the ice aren't trying to lose, but they're trying to lose. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we just talked about, there's a reason why I was talking about Connor Bedard. All right, they just pulled the goalie. Like, we're talking about the best prospect to come into the NHL since Connor McDavid. And, like he's basically like Connor McDavid and all these other megastars. He's going to be the next it thing. All right, the net is empty. Give me a goal. I don't even care who scores. I'd actually prefer if the Canadians lose this game in overtime 3-2. Oh. Because it would give them a closer chance to Connor Bedard. Come on, San Jose. Put the puck in the net. Shoot. Somebody shoot the effing puck, you losers. Shoot it. God, I hate when teams just pass the puck around and don't shoot. It's like watching soccer. It's like, dude, somebody shoot the damn ball at the net, all right? Enough. Like, I'm watching Spain play hockey here. All right, you're passing it, pass it. Yeah. You know that the Canadians don't mind this, buddy. You're like 80 feet from the net. Yeah, that was a bad shot. God, these guys suck. Come on, Montreal. You're going to have to score the empty netter here. These guys aren't going to be able to do this. Oh, no, 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 yes, yes, come on. Oh, you bastard. Oh, the net was empty. It was a nice pass off the boards. Buddy on Montreal tried. The defenseman on San Jose, like, made it like the sprawling save. Jackass, you better score now. Oh, this is going to really upset me on the way out. Don't do this to me, Lord Gambler. Give me the goal. Somebody score. Okay, here you go. Come on, man. The goalie was able to score an empty netter the other day. You guys can't put the puck in an empty net? Pad your stats. Oh, this is brutal. The puck just isn't... here we go. There we are. 2-on-1. Oh, my God, this isn't easy, though. Like, this is absolutely insanity. And the Montreal Canadiens put the puck in the net with 4 seconds left. Late Night Anger Management Class. This is Sports Rage. Welcome to the ATM machine. If you're tuning into the program, we gave it to Montreal Canadiens plus 1.5, and we just gave it to Montreal Canadiens and the San Jose Sharks over 3.5, as the Canadiens score with 4 seconds remaining at the Shark Tank in the Bay. And I swear, as we went to the break, like when we let McKinnis go, because he said, man, he goes, man, you weren't just happy with winning the bet. I said, no, this game's going to go over 3.5. And I said, in fact, the Canadiens are plus 180 right now to win by 2 goals. I said, that's the bet. We got to get this in. But as I said it, they pulled it, right? There was only 2 minutes left or something at that point, 2.5 minutes. They pulled it off the board. So I was like, son of a, I would have hit that too. I would have gotten that in. I figured that the Canadiens will score in the empty net. Thank God they did. That's where, like, they were trotting. That's the old stat pattern right there. There was no need to score at the end, right? Like, they could have just dumped the puck and won the game, but the Canadian players on the ice were trying to score in the empty net. I'll tell you, that's the one thing you got to use to your advantage, is sort of, like, knowing stuff in that way that in the old days in the NHL, they would not have scored there. Like, basically what just happened, if you're not seeing it, the Canadians had a breakaway into an empty net, essentially, and put the puck in the net with 4 seconds left. So that's like dunking a ball when you've already won, or, you know, the interception return type thing. Like, in the old days, it would have been like, no. Like, you're just padding your stats, bro. Just dump the puck in the corner, the game's over. But the modern player, and I understand why, there's a lot of money on the line. They get judged by this. How many goals did you score? So when these guys see an empty net, their eyes light up like a construction worker at a strip club on payday. Take my money, please. This is Sports Rage. The OG Scoop Jackson next.
You're listening to sports news you can actually use for places like the office water cooler
and bank deposit slips.
This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Double in December, January, and February. He's the third player in NBA history to average a triple-double in at least 3 straight calendar months, joining Oscar Robertson and Russell Westbrook. Ja Morant records his 4th career game with 30 paint points, the most by any guard since play-by-play was first tracked in 96 and 97. You notice a pattern here, huh? Of, like, every night in the NBA, like, oh, this record's broken, and this guy did this, and this guy did that. Like, we've talked about it a lot. I mean, we're just in, we're in this era right now, right? But the modern analytic guy and the modern fan gets super defensive for whatever reason. Yet, you know, it's like Jerry Seinfeld said, if you ask him which direction Israel in, he doesn't call you an anti-Semite. Right? Like, it's just, you know, certain things are, it is what it is. Leagues go through transformations. They do. And right now, the NBA is in this super, super video game offensive mode right now. All right? It's, you know, it just is. But the playoffs are going to be lit, and the playoffs are going to be off the hook. And speaking of lit and off the hook, Kyle Kuzma likes to really bring it when it comes to his pregame attire. Some of it hits, some of it misses. A lot of the time, it's a severe strikeout, a swing and a miss. Like, some of the things that this guy rolls in. Like, that sweater with the long sleeves has got to go. Like, that's just bad. I don't have a problem with him. Like, he's into fashion. It is what it is. But I was going to say, I want to see what he wore tonight, actually, because it didn't seem to be terrible. I was like, oh, yeah, it's actually not bad. That's actually not too bad. So the Los Angeles Clippers are bad, though. They lose again. So they haven't, I'm not going to blame Westbrook. They haven't won since Westbrook got there. What are Dallas now? Dallas are what, 1-4 since Kyrie's gotten there? Right? Like, these teams sort of traded for things they didn't need. Like, it's one of those, it's It's like Mo DeKeel, remember Matias, Mo DeKeel said it when he came on. He said, like, they needed a guard. Like, Westbrook's not a guard. He's just another player on the court. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you watch the Clippers play, the thing that get, you know, Tyronn Lue's a good coach, but when you watch the Clippers play, it appears as though everything is improvised. They don't have set plays. Like, everything just seems to be sort of made up on the spot, and everything, there's no ball movement. That's their problem. It's basically like, all right, give the ball to Kawhi and he'll score. Okay, no. Now we're going to give it to Paul and Paul's going to shoot it now. There's no, like, I'm going to swing it to you. We're going to swing into the corner. And it's like, right, they don't have that cohesiveness. They don't play together enough. This is the load management, the injury thing. It's hard to just flick that switch. And the not just like the defense, but the lack of stops in close games, Matias. This is a severe problem. And watching the Clippers last three games right now and talking and about Kawhi Leonard, and, you know, Kawhi Leonard is an awesome player. It's pretty clear he's not the same player that he was before. He can put up the 28 and stuff, but he used to put up 28 and terrorize you on defense. Now he stands around on defense and puts up the 28 because he can't. He doesn't have the energy to do it at both ends. He'll like, he won't last. And he's not that old. Like, they've got big problems, and I wanted to buy in, but let's be real. There's no way in hell we can buy into this team in the playoffs, Matias. They can't stop anybody, and they can't outscore anybody. It's a bad combination. I mean, they just got dunked on by Rudy Gobert in the clutch and stuff. Like, the T-Wolves just school, like, you know what I mean? The T-Wolves just schooled them in a close game. Like, they don't win these close games.
Gabe, I think you nailed it on the head. You know, an improvised offense. You know, when they're down on the offensive end, it's who's hot and who's not. There's no set plays.
ISO ball.
It's ISO ball, pick and roll. Who has the ball? Who's the star? Is it Kawhi or is it Paul George? Has Norm Powell made the last two shots? Maybe he's going to take the next shot if he's hot. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get with the Clippers right now. And Tyronn Lue's having a hard time trying to find his combinations at the end of the game. You know, you look at the minutes now. Eric Gordon only got 7 minutes today. You know, why? In the last couple games, you know, you bring Eric Gordon and he's been getting 25 minutes, and now he all of a sudden gets 7 minutes.
Yeah, but they also gave up a million points when he was on the court. He's old, bro.
Terrence Mann, he's going to get more minutes. The reason they lost to Sacramento is because Terrence Mann didn't close out the game at the end of the game, right? Well, he gets more minutes, and they still lose. Mason Plumlee was a non-factor today. He was a big factor in that game against Sacramento. You don't know who's getting the minutes and who's not. There's not a consistent flow. And as you can see, Tyronn Lue's searching for answers left and right, and he's not finding any, Gabe. And right now the Clippers are a couple losses away from trying to fight their way into the playoffs in a play-in game. And being
I thought Kawhi could just sort of say, all right, I'm back. I haven't played much in the last couple of years, but let's go on a mini run here, right? You know, I mean, I haven't been around, but let's just go. I'll give you the best 3 months I have here. Let's go. And I don't know if he has that next gear. I don't think he does. I think he's pushed to the max as it is now. I also think he's playing more than he probably wants to play now. And he doesn't have a choice now. And they keep losing. And it just keeps digging a deeper hole where he has to play more. I'm just frustrated with myself because, you know, we've been on the air during these Clipper games, right? Friday night, we saw the double overtime, second highest scoring game ever. What was it? Sunday night in Denver, right? That was Sunday night. Sunday night in Denver. And so you went from a double overtime, straight out U.S. Olympic, you know, track trial, track meet, to playing in the altitude on Sunday night in Denver. And I remember what I said at the time right after the game. I said, oh, man, we're so betting against the Clippers in the next game. I said, these guys are going to have nothing left in their legs. Like, they're already old. They're already, like, they're not even that old, but they're, like, they are old. It's weird. Like, Kawhi is what? Kawhi's 31 years old, 30, 31 now? Like, he's not old, but he is old. Like, he looks like he's, like, 48, this guy. Right? Kawhi, like, he has an old face, but his body is old. His knees are old. Paul George isn't that old. Paul George plays well, but they don't have that next level. You know who they remind me of, actually, Matias, a lot? But they're not even as good. They remind me of the Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan Raptors. where it was like DeRozan and Lowry, whatever. They would combine for like 55 and whatever. One of them would give you 27 one night. The other guy would give you 22 and they would lose. Like, you know what I'm saying? It would be like one of these. It would be like, I don't know, they're supposed to be good. They're kind of good, but they can't get over the top. Like, I said the other night, and I might have to take it back, and I apologize to all the King fans out there, all six of you, that, and listen, I bet on the Kings before the season started with their win total. I said they're going to go over the 33.5, and they easily have. But I did say the other night, like, they're not really, like, are they really contenders? But they might be. If you look at the Western Conference, this thing is wide open.
I'm still thinking of that guy that put that major bet in, Gabe, before the
season. Oh, my God. Started.
And you know what? That's a hot life bet right now, Gabe. That team believes right now, Gabe. They have that energy. They have that new team energy. But that you know what, Gabe? Those teams also don't have sustainable success in the playoffs.
You know what it is? Yeah, those young teams, Matthias, that haven't been there before catches up to them. Right? It just does. Like, it's hard to, let alone win three. It's hard to win one series. And plus, they're going to get a good team in the first round.
It reminds me of Teddy Covers last year when he used to come on and he'd say, Memphis is that regular season basketball team that's going to make you a lot of money in the regular season. Just keep betting them in the regular season. But once you get to the playoffs, they're going to fade around the second round.
If you guys recall, so Matthias brought up, a bettor could win $10.3 million if the Sacramento Kings win the championship. And we remember at the time, remember at the time, people were like, what the hell does this guy know? What the hell is this guy doing? He bet it twice in Las Vegas. He walked into Caesars and bet $10,000 on the Sacramento Kings to win the championship at 750-1. And then he went back a couple of days later and put another $8,000 at 350-1.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Twisted Tuesday. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabe Morenci, Sirius XM Channel 159, Sports Grid Radio Networks. Shout out to all of our AM radio affiliates, including the mightier 1090 ESPN Radio, and a 50,000 watt juggernaut SoCal in the house. And so is the original OG Scoop Jackson. It's been too long since we've had Scoop Jackson on the program, but he's a busy man. We're glad he has time to kick it with us tonight, Scoop. It's always a pleasure, my man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. How you been, bro?
Always. I've been good. Since we haven't spoken, Happy New Year, man.
Yeah, since we haven't spoken, there's been a hell of a lot of stuff that's gone on in the National Basketball Association. Yeah, I got to tell you.
Seems like it's summertime. You know, basketball, NBA usually gets busy and dramatic during the off season to keep the, you know, to keep the seasons never ending. But, yeah, it's been trade deadline, you know, lower management, you know, just everything. So, it's been busy.
I've never bought in. I'm a Kevin Durant fan. I think he's an awesome player. I haven't bought into the whole, you know, he was a bus, you know, he was a bus rider, you know, the Charles Barkley. You know, I don't think the Warriors would have won those championships without him. I mean, he was obviously an impact player with that basketball team. But at the same point in time, they did win another chip after he moved on. He goes to Brooklyn. It implodes. So what do you make of Kevin Durant in Phoenix right now? And what would it mean to his legacy if he was able to add another championship besides the Golden State Warriors ones?
Yeah, I don't think it does anything to really his legacy. I don't think so. I don't think it helps or hurts. I think his legacy is cemented exactly where it's going to be. I think the Brooklyn thing is an interesting narrative because as much as had that worked out, it would have changed his legacy a little bit because even though they tried to build a super team, it wasn't a super team, quote unquote, when he got there.
It would have been his team. It would have been his championship, that
one,
right?
Yeah, right. And then that could have changed the narrative of his legacy a little bit. But at the end of the day, we can all look at Brooklyn and honestly say the reason it fell apart was not his fault. So we can't hold what happened in Brooklyn necessarily. I don't think history is going to hold what happened in Brooklyn against him and say, well, hey, he went to Brooklyn and he never won one there with the team that was his team. I think historically we will, if we're smart, you know, sometimes historically we get vague and we stop putting details into what the real story is. But I think in this particular case, you know what I'm saying? Brooklyn won't be held against it because what happened really wasn't his particular fault. So many other things went wrong that can't be directly related to him. But I do think if he wins another ring in Phoenix, it just, you know, it won't help or hurt his legacy. It'll be like, all right, Kevin Durant got 3 rings. Kevin Durant got 4 rings. You know, it doesn't increase his legacy and doesn't stop the quote-unquote Kevin Durant haters from saying what they're going to continue to say. I don't think being in Phoenix is going to stop that. I think Brooklyn may have, like, silenced some of that, but I don't think it's going to stop anything.
I think you're right. I don't think he cares, but I think you're right about that, Scoop.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Yeah. If he wins, they'll still be those people. Yeah, but look, he joined Booker, and you know, he went to Phoenix. But let's be real. The Phoenix Suns have never won a championship before, right, in their franchise history. So let's put that out there on the table. And let's be real. There was nobody was saying before KD got here, no one was saying, keep your eye on D-Book, keep your eye on CP3. I mean, come on, man. Ayton and Monty Williams don't even talk. Like, you know what I'm saying?
No, but that's this year. The year before that, and the year before that, they were talking about, all right, this is a championship caliber team. And then we saw them regressing. So what's going to wind up happening is that they're going to say Kevin Durant was the thing that tipped. He was the tipping point that got them a championship. And I don't think that necessarily helps his narrative as far as his legacy is concerned, because the one knock that he has on that is that he hasn't been the sole person. He hasn't had his own team. He's gone to something – the teams he's gone to, you know, especially in Golden State, they're already prepared. All they need – he's the one thing that's missing. And he tends to go to teams that people say just one thing is missing. And he's only done it once, really, and now this will be twice. And he's playing on 4 teams. But that's going to be the narrative if he continues to win. And he is like, hey, you know what? Yes, they may have won it because of him, but it's not like he's the centerpiece that everything else was built around. So it's not just his. And that's that splitting hair narratives that we're living in this generation as far as, like, assessing people's legacies. And it's based on situations like not just Bird and Magic and Jordan and Akeem and Isaiah and all them. It's built on the existence of cats like Giannis. You know, it's like, all right, we saw him do this in Milwaukee and he won a chip. Why can't Kevin Durant, you know, do the same thing? And since he hadn't done the same thing, then we're going to hold that against him as we, you know, assess his legacy. And I've always had an issue with that, Gabe, for this particular reason. To me, we can't have it both ways. And I always look at the greater picture as, okay, for those people who are complaining about Kevin Durant and individuals like him, and even LeBron we could throw in this conversation, that tend to jump from team to team and, you know, sometimes not, you know, build teams by themselves or build super teams, whatever. I get where you're coming from, but you can't have it both ways, because would you rather them not be able to do that? People forget that players didn't have any control over their movement. They really were not just victims of contracts, but victims of ownership groups, team management, on how their entire careers got played out.
You're right.
So they had no control. Also,
there's like 75 years of no control at all in pro sports.
Exactly.
We're in an era now. Yeah.
So you can't sit up here and say, well, we want players to have some say. You know, there should be some equity in what they do as far as controlling their
and
own
Scoop.
Career. You can't have both.
And people always do want it both ways, and that's what's annoying about society. But at the same point in time, and it's ridiculous, but people criticize Damian Lillard for not leaving, right?
Right.
And the same thing, like Bradley Beal. They're like, oh, he must not care about winning, because you know what? Why doesn't he want to get traded from Washington? Oh, well, Damian Lillard, I don't know. He must not really care about winning. And when it's the opposite, right? When Beal says, yeah, it's a long shot, but Beal said there'd be nothing better, man, than winning a championship for the Washington Wizards and bringing a championship to this city. Is he fighting an uphill battle? Sure, but he's fighting it. And then you look at Dame. He gets criticized for not wanting to leave Portland.
Yeah, and but here's the thing, and here's where the hypocrisy comes into it, as far as I'm concerned, is that these are the same individuals that, once their career is over, are going to hold against them that they didn't win any rings. Like, once again, you can't have it both ways. You can't, like, say, all right, you know, Kevin Durant, we're going to hold against Kevin Durant for jumping
which
around.
Which is ridiculous, too.
We're going to hold against Dame Lillard for not leaving and getting a ring. And guess what? So Kevin Durant does have rings, LeBron does have rings, and Steph Curry does have rings, and that's good. But now we're going to hold it against Damian Lillard because he doesn't have a ring. Now we're going to hold it against Bradley Beal as far as where
isn't
he's in the careers. Yeah, because he doesn't have rings, you can't have it both ways. Like,
this is almost our fault, though, Scoop. Our generation, our old guys, because you know who perpetuated this. All started with Chuck. Look at Shaq, bro. How many times does Shaq drop, like, a night? How many rings you win, Chuck, right? Like, it always goes back to that. And it started with Charles Barkley. And Charles Barkley's a hell of a lot better basketball player than, I don't know, like 80% of guys with rings, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think, Charles became an easy target because he was on TV every night. But I think it started way before that. And Charles wasn't the only one. Charles became the
Karl Malone used to be the guy that would get called out for.
Patrick Ewing, you know, all these cats stayed loyal. Dominique Wilkins, you know, all these cats that did great things and they never won any rings, they became a collective in this conversation. And so more than anything is Jordan, because Jordan was the one, the Karl Malones and the John Stocktons. Everybody talked about who Jordan stopped from getting rings. That's where the conversation started, and it included a bunch of people. Charles became the front runner as far as the target because he was on TV every night talking against and with people who did have rings. So they almost made him the target of the jokes and the target of the narrative. When at the end of the day, it's not society, it's us, the media, that really made this a thing and made players, and here's the thing, made players adjust what they wanted to do to not be a part of that narrative when it comes to their legacy. A lot of what these players are doing and going to teams and building teams and making sure they get a ring is because of us. We're the ones,
because
they don't want to go to the rest of their post-lives being the guy that, hey, well, you didn't win a ring, so you're not as great as we thought you were. And that's on us. And so why are we mad with the player when they're trying to avoid that? As a player, I don't want, like, after I retire, the next 40 years of my life to be that the start of every conversation. Well, you didn't win a ring. You didn't win a ring. You didn't win as a, so you're not that great. Or you're not in the top 75 because you didn't win a ring. You're not one of the greatest players ever because you didn't win a ring. When that has nothing to do with how great a player was individually. But because we started this thing, players nowadays are like, I'll be damned if I'm going to sit around and not get a ring so they can hold that against me. Gary Payton ran and got himself a ring. You know, he's like, I'm going to get a ring. Karl Malone tried to at least get a ring, so he didn't have to hear this the rest of the
Hey,
and
Scoop.
That's what players are doing now. So if I'm Kevin Durant and the Golden State Warriors come to me, I'm like, yeah, let's do this, because I don't want that to you may be able to say a lot of things about me, but you're not going to be able to say that, and I'm not having my life, my post, and my family, and my kids have to hear this for the rest of the I'm not doing it.
Scoop Jackson is always telling it like it is, and it's a great point when people criticize players for moving or joining teams, as Scoop just stated. It's there. We're the same people. The same people that criticize them. The same people that criticize them for not winning after. More with Scoop Jackson on the other side. The Late Night Anger Man for Class continues. Bring it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
With iHeartRadio in the house. So, Scoop, man, there's a ton of stuff I want to throw at you.
Okay.
Let's send it to the East Coast here with the New York Knicks. Are you buying in right now? I mean, they've won 8 of their last 10 games. They're the 5 seed in the Eastern Conference. It seems like this team is starting to find an identity. And I'll give Jalen Brunson credit, man, and the Knicks credit. They wanted him. They got him. I thought that, you know, it was a little bit overhyped, like, okay, if you think Brunson is, you know, the guy's going to put you over the top, but he's fit in perfectly. Tibbs got this team all on the same page right now. Are you buying into the Knicks, or is this just a nice little run they're on right now?
Okay, what am I buying into? Like, what we talk about, like, first-round playoff, Eastern conference semifinals, you know, finals. What am I buying into?
I would say when I say buy into, it's just a miracle they don't suck, actually. So that's sort of the starting point. What's their ceiling? Yeah, I don't know. The first round's their ceiling, right? Yes.
I don't know. Let's see how they play. I buy into that they're a lot better, and Tibbs got the player that I think he knew would be a better fit for him as a coach instead of, and this is going to sound crazy, instead of like a Donovan Mitchell. I think Jalen Brunson is much more of a Tom Thibodeau type of player that he can build around and make happen. And I also think, keep this in mind, and my sons and I talk about this all the time, and this may be crazy, and it may be a reach, but I can't remember any time in NBA history where the three top players on that particular team were all left-handed. Usually you adjust to one or two left-handed players from a defensive standpoint, but now you have to scheme differently on Knicks because RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, and Jalen Brunson are all left-handed players, and they're all left-hand dominant. I think it's part of the reason the Knicks are winning and figuring out is because teams have to figure out how to defend against them. Because it's so tough, you have to adjust everything you're doing defensively to everything they do. Because those are your three major ball players out there.
It's like driving on the other side of the road, right, for other teams.
It's
throwing them off.
That little nugget is working on their behalf, and they're getting buy-in from everybody. And I think the fact that they did get Jalen Brunson as opposed to Donovan Mitchell has worked out for that chemistry on the team because it seems more balanced. I think if Donovan Mitchell were there, he would have separated himself as the guy. And then Julius Randle and R.J. Barrett, everybody else would have fallen in line. If you really look at this team the way it is, it seems more balanced. You know what I'm saying? There's no true superstar there, even though Julius Randle did make the all-star team and their all-star caliber there. But it's pretty level across the board. Like, there's no one particular guy you need to key in on every night and say, all right, the Knicks are going to – that guy's going to – we got to stop this guy and we stop the Knicks. It doesn't work that way anymore. It's all across the board. Everybody knows their roles. Everybody buys into Tibbs, and Tibbs believes in everybody, and that's what's most important. Tibbs has, over the last couple of years, not had the belief in certain players. And, you know, we're talking about Evan Fournier being one and definitely Kemba Walker. We didn't have belief in those players, and it didn't work out, and the team suffered for that. This year, with Jalen Brunson there, he's playing the players that he believes in, and he's comfortable doing that, and that's why I think we're seeing the results with the Knicks. Now, the end result, looking at how it flushes out, if there's a team that is, like, missing a player because of injury that is higher seeded than them, if the Knicks are fully healthy, I could see them actually probably taking a higher seeded team out if they're not 100%.
It's a good example, as we just saw them. You're right. No Jalen Brown, they beat Boston, right? I mean, yeah, Tatum got kicked out of the game, but still, like, they're competing. And, yeah, when I say, you know, buying into the big picture, listen, I think it's Boston, Milwaukee. I don't know, maybe Philadelphia can take that step in the Eastern Conference. But the playoffs are going to be a lot of fun because this thing is wide open. But I really wanted to ask you something, Scoop, because there's been so much debate, and it goes on all the time, and I've been part of it, and even I'm kind of sick of it and stuff. It's just like, all right, dude, like, whatever. Like, the old versus new, right? It's just constant. And J.J. Redick is at the forefront of this. And I like J.J., right? I think he's a smart guy, and he's played in the league a hell of a long time. And if you're going to get into an argument with him, you better bring it because the guy's smart, right? He's going to be able to make you look, make you look bad. But you know, when their new talking point, and he seems to be the leader, right? Because he's their smartest guy that they have. When I talk about, you know, the analytics guys or the modern, you know what I mean, the modern crew, when he said, well, you guys all talk about how hard the defense was in the Jordan era, so to speak, in the bad boy era, etc., in the Larry Bird era, and he said it was terrible defense. There were just hard fouls. It wasn't good defense. And he said, you look at a guy like Curry now, and he's got he's got people defending him, and he's got Marcus Smart on him. And I don't get that argument when we see the NBA on a nightly basis. I mean, bro, the total scoop, I'm a betting man. The totals are like all-star totals, dude. Like, 245s, 240s, 250s. So I mean, if somebody scores 28 points in a game in which there was 248 points scored in the game, it doesn't have the same impact as somebody scoring 32 points in a game that the freaking final score was 78-76. But I am tired of the old versus new stuff. But what do you make of it? What are your thoughts on this when you hear that? They didn't play defense in the old days. They just had hard fouls. But I'm thinking, I don't know, Gary Payton was a pretty good defensive player, wasn't he?
Right. That's what I was about to say. And I think that's the thing about it that I think is a little bit different in that they're – aren't that many Marcus Smarts or Drew Holidays, you know, in the league.
Exactly. There's a few of them.
There are a few of them. And to J.J.'s point, which I hear what J.J.'s saying. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I hear what he's saying. And I get the point that he's trying to make, especially from, you know, when he gets to the numbers. But from the defensive standpoint, I think the game has changed, and I think – we need to break down exactly what he's talking about not playing defense. That he's speaking about the perimeter defense that was played back then. But the game wasn't a perimeter game.
Nobody was shooting threes back then, so they didn't have to defend the perimeter. Yeah.
So they're going to defend the guards differently than they're defending Steph Curry now. So when he's talking about the Marcus Smarts guarding Steph, you know, for like 48 minutes with their hands on him, that's fine. But they're setting picks and stuff to try to free him so that, you know, Marcus Smart is not on him by the time he catches and is ready to shoot. But you have to work on that. But they weren't doing that back in the day. And the defense that he says they weren't playing is all perimeter. Now, if J.J. Redick came out and said that they weren't playing defense on the blocks, if they weren't playing defense below the foul line, you get what I'm saying? Then I'm saying you're wrong. And he would never say that. You know, because he knows the defense that they're not playing in the paint now.
He never brought that up, but it's a great point. Like an attorney in court, he didn't bring that side up about in the paint. That's a great point.
In the paint, it's two different things. That's what I'm saying, because the game is changed. The game is shifted. Because guess what? Rudy Gobert has sat up and won, what, two or three defensive players of the year? And we all know that he wouldn't even be close to even – he wouldn't even be a top 10 defensive player in his position had he played in the 80s. But we're not going to sit up here and say that he's not a decent defensive player. We're just saying that in this era, he doesn't have to do as much and play the same type of defense that the Patrick Ewing, Olajuwon, you know, Alonzo Mourning, all these kids, the Bill Cartwright. I'll go back to Nate Thurman days. You know, they did the defense was played a different position in the game, and J.J.'s not saying that. So I get what he's saying, but if you really key into the point...
I just thought of Robert Parrish.
All he's talking is... Right.
Imagine telling Robert Parrish to his face you didn't play defense.
Right, but that's not what J.J.'s saying. If you understand, if we really dissect what he said, he's strictly talking about perimeter defense. And it's not that they didn't play defense. They just played it differently. And the demand wasn't there for them to play it the way that they're playing defense now.
Man, Scoop, as always, man, just laying it down, simplifying the answer. Okay, Scoop, we'll get you out of here in a couple of minutes, and I always appreciate your time. Mm-hmm. You and I were around for the David Stern era, and he really was Stern, right? That guy didn't play around, and at times I thought he was, you know, was a little bit over the top. And remember, like, Silver always used to get, you know, he'd get applauded, and he was all, you know, the nice guy. Is he too nice? Are the players running over him? Do they fear him? Is, you know, what can we do to tighten things up from the All-Star weekend to load management? I disagree often with a lot of Bill Simmons takes, but I thought Bill sort of worded it well, and he said it's sort of like the NBA is like a fatherless house now, almost, like, you know what I mean, like a parentless, like the kids are kind of like, you know what I mean, like running the operation.
Yeah.
What about load? Can Stern, what do you think about Silver? Like, can he tighten? Can he get a little tighter here?
One, I love Adam Silver. You know, Adam Silver's a friend of mine. I love Adam Silver. I'm much closer to Adam Silver than I was to David Stern. You know, but I'm not saying Adam Silver without flaws. But I'll say this. I'll say this to you, Gabe. It's interesting to me that we're having a conversation about, and I'll bring Bill into this because you mentioned Bill Simmons. I'll put it this way. What do we expect him to do in the middle of a season?
Nothing he can do. Yeah.
So he can't do anything. So for us to say that this is whatever Bill Simmons said or anybody, any criticism they're laying on Adam Silver, I'm asking the question, what do you expect him to do right now in the moment, especially when there is a Players Association. You can't make changes in the middle of the season. Now, if we go into next season and there hasn't been any changes made, and Adam Silver doesn't bring to the table, you know, some concessions and some changes that he feels the league needs to make and puts it in front of the Players Association and talks to the owners, and if he doesn't make an attempt to change anything, then I think your feelings or your, you know, whatever, your beliefs or your judgment on him as a commissioner are valid. At this point, criticizing someone in the middle of a season knowing that they can't do anything about it, there's nothing Adam Silver can do right now about load management. It's going to be a tough sale to do anything in the offseason, but right now there's nothing he can do. So for us to publicly criticize something, him not doing anything, I'll use the word disingenuous as opposed to what I really want to say. But we should be smarter than that, and we should call out people who actually do that. And I'm not just calling out Bill Simmons. I'm calling out anybody who's uses a microphone, uses a podcast, uses a...
Well, Charles Barkley's at the forefront of it when he would right, know exactly that the players have right. a damn contract and there's nothing, it's just called the CBA. You're exactly right.
Right, you can't do it. He can't do anything. There's no changes Adam Silver can make right now, so why are we criticizing what's not happening right now? We can't do anything. Once again, save these comments for the beginning of the next year, and if Adam Silver doesn't do anything in the offseason or at least try to make an attempt to do something, then I think those situations are valid. But anything before that, I think it's disingenuous and unfair and ignorant on our part. It's like we're only looking to get a reaction because we're smart enough. I'm including myself. I'm including Bill Simmons. I'm including Charles Barkley.
I'm myself, anybody. Too. We all throw these things out here.
We're smart enough to know that we're making comments that really don't have any answer to them. We're just making comments for the sake of making comments. And that's dumb on our part.
Scoop Jackson. Well, I can't end it any better than that. Scoop, what do you got going on? What do you want to share with us on the way out here, man?
Oh, nothing. We just got through doing a piece on Cheney University on the 82 class. They've been the only HBCU team to ever reach an NCAA final, men's or women. It's a story that's 41 years old and nobody really knew it. It's like the basketball version of Hidden Figures. So we just got through telling that story on Sunday on Sports Center and working on college basketball, ready to come up, the championship week for ESPN. So that's it.
Awesome stuff, Scoop. Awesome stuff, man. We always appreciate your time, bro. Let's do this again sooner rather than later. Always love talking hoops with you, my man.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Good kicking it with the OG Scoop Jackson. The late night anger management class. This is Sports Rage. I am Morency. We haven't gotten into much XFL football yet this week. I will throw it out there right now that I think that the Houston Roughnecks should be bigger favorites over San Antonio. The point spread is 4.5. There really hasn't been like much movement throughout the week or anything like that. I thought there would be. I thought that people would jump on this, but what it tells me is that the XFL betting market is somewhat limited. And I don't know how many of you tuning in are actually betting and laying it down. People are always sort of cautious of these new leagues, which is funny because, you know, there's the old gambling tale, right, about the guy. He calls the bookie for Monday Night Football, places a bet, loses the bet on Monday Night Football. Tuesday night, calls his bookie, he bets NBA basketball, he loses NBA basketball. Wednesday, says, you know what, I lost in the NBA last night, let me bet some college basketball. loses, calls basketball. Thursday, calls the bookie. Bookie tells him all that's going on tonight is WNBA. He goes, I'm not betting WNBA. I don't know anything about that. And if you don't get it, then you're the mark. This is Sports Rage. Bring it.